I came, he saw, he conquered. From skeptic to devotee, the story of Sub-Registrar Narayan Iyer by Srimati T.R. Kanakammal. Narayan Iyer, who came at first reluctantly to see Sri Bhagavan, was transformed by his presence into an ardent devotee. In the following recollection by Srimati T.R. Kanakammal, his devotion to Sri Bhagavan is highlighted along with his chosen sadhana of the reception of Sri Bhagavan's composition, Ullathu Narpathu, or 40 verses on reality. Ullathu Narpathu, the genesis of which was given in the last issue of the Maharishi, is a series of inspired verses which encapsulates the Upadesha given by Sri Bhagavan. Narayan Iyer was a devotee. He came to scoff, but who remained as a worshipper. He was an out-and-out skeptic with no religion in him. He considered sannyasins and sadhus to be impostors and parasites, and no one, however great, had the right to accept the homage of others. But a chance meeting with Sri Bhagavan wrought a complete transformation in this doubting Thomas and turned him into a staunch devotee. Dr. Ramakrishna Iyer, his philosopher and guide, like Narayan Iyer, was also working in Chitpat, was well acquainted with Sri Bhagavan, being the son of Lakshmi Ammal of Tiruchuri, who had been one of Sri Bhagavan's childhood playmates. He invited Narayan Iyer to go with him to Thiruvannamalai during Deepam festival, and his invitation was accepted, although Narayan Iyer disliked crowds and temple festivals had no attraction for him. He agreed on the condition that he would neither come inside the ashramam nor prostrate to the Swami if perchance he met him. Circumstances forced him to accompany his friend into the ashram. As they were coming inside, a person clad only in a white loincloth, a towel on his shoulder, a kamandalu in one hand and a walking stick in the other, stopped in his walk in the opposite direction on seeing them. He spoke kindly to the doctor and inquired about his mother and brother. Do Iyer guess that this must be the Maharishi? He did not look up, thinking that after all, he was a complete stranger to him. On being introduced as the sub-registrar of Chetpet, out of courtesy, he looked up. Let us hear him now in his own words. What a wonderful face and what a welcoming smile. Bewitching, fascinating, and a powerful look too. In a moment, I was at his feet on the gravel ground. He is not bogus, looks genuine, but has he solved the mystery of life, of the universe that we see around us? If not, I withdraw my homage and go my way. I tried to find out if he had written any books. I got a copy of Ullathu Narpathu in Tamil, just published. As he tried to read the first stanza, he was confounded and filled with dismay at the repeated use of the word Ullathu, reality, being, which seemed too closely packed. The pure language embodying the essence of absolute reality would drive even pandits of Tamil prosody to despair. Someone nearby said that the Maharishi himself would explain to them the 40 verses that night. In anxious and eager suspense, Narayan Iyer waited for the night. A solemn stillness pervaded the air. There was absolute silence. The Maharishi read the first verse. The mere reading of it made the meaning as clear as clarity itself. Verse by verse, he read and explained in a voice so sweet and melodious that it seemed to come from a transcendent being. The climax came when explaining the verse. He said, God cannot be seen with our eyes and known by our senses. This is what is meant by saying. Seeing God is to be God. Suddenly, the stentorian voice of Dandapani Swami boomed out from among the listeners. Is to Bhagavan saying this out of personal experience? Swami Bhava, the question asked with such a naivet was answered with equal candor. Else, would I dare to say so? It flashed upon Narayan Iyer instantly that if he, whom all religions acclaim as God, were to appear before him in flesh and blood, here he is. Successive waves of bliss flooding from within shook his frame. He went outside to compose himself. Narayan Iyer later wrote, I came, he saw, he conquered. The spell was thus cast to him. Henceforth, Sri Bhagavan was his guard. Sri Bhagavan was the way and the support on the way as well. To Narayan Iyer, the content of Ulladu Narpudu became Vedic verity and its verses veritable mantras, and he took to chanting them as japa. From then on, nothing could stop him from frequenting the ashram. His job entailed frequent transfers. However, there was no let-up in his regular visits. Never a Sunday passed without Narayan Iyer arriving at the ashramam, and he always had some delectable snacks with him, which had been prepared by his wife, Lalita Iyer, who believed that she was cooking delicacies for God. These were savored by everyone, as the Bhagavan would never accept anything unless there was enough for all. Once, when Shantamal inquired of Sri Bhagavan whether she should prepare some snacks in the ashram, Sri Bhagavan replied, tomorrow is Sunday. Narayan Iyer will be arriving and will surely be bringing something to eat. In the afternoon, devotees bringing snacks would offer the entire lot in their containers to Sri Bhagavan. After a quick look around the hall, Sri Bhagavan would pick up a little and hand over the rest to the attendant nearby to be distributed in equal measure among those present. Muruganar, a keen observer of Sri Bhagavan's ways, used to recall with wonder that if the attendant gave each one present exactly the same amount that Sri Bhagavan had taken, it would just suffice for all, whether the number present was great or small. This was found to be unfailingly true. Whatever the quantity Sri Bhagavan allotted for himself was found to be the right quantity for distribution to all that day. In those days, the early 30s, the area surrounding the ashramam was very bare. Mother's shrine was yet to be constructed. Anyone approaching the precincts of the ashramam could be easily seen from the old hall. Once, between two successive weekend visits by Narayan Iyer, the ashramam administration, feeling that Sri Bhagavan needed some rest in the afternoon after lunch, had imposed a restriction that no one should be allowed to enter the old hall between 12 noon and 2 p.m. Neither Sri Bhagavan nor Narayan Iyer was aware of this new decree. The following Sunday afternoon, as usual, Iyer arrived with Om Pudi, a snack made of gram flour and spices, in hand. As he approached the hall, those strategically positioned to deflect the would-be visitors until 2 p.m., the new receiving hour, apprised him of the rule. Iyer, though still at a great distance from Sri Bhagavan, made his customary prostration from where he was, retraced his steps, and waited until the appointed hour. At 2 p.m., he came before Sri Bhagavan. Sri Bhagavan had spied him on his arrival and disappearance. As soon as he entered the hall, Sri Bhagavan asked him, didn't you come at 1 o'clock? I saw you through the window and was expecting you to come to the hall at any moment, but you didn't come. Did you have to go elsewhere? Narayan Iyer, who had no idea that Sri Bhagavan was not supposed to know of the new arrangement, replied in all innocence, "My train arrived late and I could come only at 1 o'clock, but was informed that Sri Bhagavan nowadays rests in the afternoons and is not to be disturbed until 2 p.m. Hence, I have come only now." Sri Bhagavan listened without any comment other than his customary, "Oh, is it so?" The next day after lunch, instead of going into the hall, Sri Bhagavan sat outside the hall. The attendant very hesitantly suggested that he go inside as it was becoming very hot. Sri Bhagavan said, "Nobody is allowed to enter the hall until 2 p.m. Is there also a rule that I should not come out until 2? Then Sri Bhagavan, the very embodiment of compassion, added, "People come from faraway places by various means, suffering innumerable hardships in order to get here. How can they be sure of the exact time of their arrival when they come after all that? How fair is it to deny them ready access?" Hearing this, the management immediately revoked the new rule. Owing to the profound grace of Sri Bhagavan, in due course, Narayana Iyer was posted to Tiruvannamalai itself. He was the first in the long line of devotees to have had the rare privilege of establishing a residence near the ashramam in order to be in the holy presence of Sri Bhagavan on a regular basis. His entire sadhana comprised of simply remaining with Sri Bhagavan whenever possible in the hall or in the kitchen, cutting vegetables, grinding chutney, and preparing breakfast in the wee hours of the morning. Prior to constructing his house, Iyer took the plans to Sri Bhagavan to have them blessed. After careful perusal, Sri Bhagavan observed, "The plan is all right, but where is the well?" Though Iyer had a location in mind, it was not marked on the blueprint. This turned out to be a benediction, as Sri Bhagavan selected the site and marked the exact location. Later on, one could see what a blessing it was. Not only was the water as sweet as tender coconut water, but the well never ran dry and was thus a source of succor for the entire neighborhood in times of severe drought. His wife Lalita was a truly sattvic woman, given to dharmic ways and scrupulously adhering to the sastric injunctions pertaining to a Brahmin housewife. Simple, carefree, and unattached, she ran the household with a contented mind and to the satisfaction of the entire family, making optimum use of the resources available to her. Sub-Registrar Narayan Iyer derived inordinate pleasure in serving his cow. Tending his garden was also dear to him. The occasions when his cow was about to give birth were significant enough to merit a day's leave from his work. This exclusive privilege, Mrs. Iyer humorously used to remark, was the cow's alone and not extended to his wife for her deliveries. Iyer's one passion was to chant Ulladu Narpadu unceasingly. Neither conventional Vedic duties nor extravagant ritualistic observances had any attraction for him. The constant chanting of Ulladu Narpadu was all the religious observance known to him. It would start right from the morning. Died in South Indian Brahminical custom, Narayan Iyer looked forward to his invigorating cup of morning coffee. The person who milked the cow used to turn up at 5 a.m., announcing his arrival by ringing his bicycle bell. Iyer, who would invariably be chanting Ulladu Narpadu loudly, would open the gate for him. The day would therefore begin with Ulladu Narpadu, a routine so predictable and punctual that the neighbor opposite him, an Andhra lady, remarked that she could safely set her clock by his recitation in the morning. His chanting continued throughout the day while he watered the plants or gave the cow a bath. If ever he were to hear a voice raised in argument among children, he would simply raise his voice and chant louder. It was a wonder to see the children immediately quietened, as if the mesmerizing spell of this powerful mantra made them aware of Sri Bhagavan's very presence. Iyer had unshakable conviction that Ulladu Narpadu was verily Upanishadic truth. The Taittiriya Upanishad of the ashram's Vedic Parayana extols the greatness of womb. As per the Vedic tradition, the sacrificial fire during havan is ignited with the single syllable. Permission to offer the oblation is sought with this om and granted with om. Ulladu Narpadu for Iyer enjoyed a similar exalted status. I, Kanakamma, stayed in Iyer's compound, occupying a small cottage for 10 years. He looked upon me as his own daughter. He always made himself aware of my requirements when he procured groceries for his own household and would always meet my needs. Nights were an ideal time to be with Sri Bhagavan, though the ladies were not allowed this privilege, in the sweet and silent hours of the early night. Permeated by the powerful presence of Sri Bhagavan, those around him never knew the passage of time. That was when Sri Bhagavan regaled devotees with the most interesting stories and soul-stirring incidents, immersing them all in waves of bliss. And what bliss it was to be alive then! To be in the presence was heaven indeed. These few devotees had Sri Bhagavan exclusively to themselves, for even the attendants would quietly depart, leaving them alone with Sri Bhagavan. As Bhagavan's Mahanirvana approached, Narayan Iyer was never far from Sri Bhagavan. At that time, Sri Bhagavan's water pot and walking stick were in his room, as he could not use them anymore. Iyer sensed that several people had secret designs on them, wanting to take them away and preserve them as private sacred relics. After the Mahasamadhi, Abhishekam and Aarti were performed, and the holy body was taken in procession in a small ratha, a hand-drawn cart, around the mother's shrine. Iyer took this opportune moment and picked up the walking stick and kamandalu and slowly walked ahead of the ratha up to the samadhi chamber where the body would be enshrined. He descended into the chamber where the body was placed and laid Sri Bhagavan's walking stick and kamandalu on either side of the body. The samadhi pit was then slowly filled in. In the aftermath of Sri Bhagavan's Mahanirvana, Iyer did not give up his earlier routine of having Sri Bhagavan's darshan daily. He had darshan of Sri Bhagavan at the samadhi shrine and continued to visit the old hall. The Iyers stayed on in Thiruvannamalai, as did Chadwick, who for a time took up residence in the Iyer compound in a small thatched roof cottage until he was invited by the ashram management to move back there again. Later in life, the Iyers moved to Madras, where the children took care of them in their old age. Narayan Iyer and his wife were in the Grihastha householder ashramam and followed Dharma meticulously. Yet mentally, both had donned the ochre robe, and the way they lived was a penance tapas that required no other spiritual practice. Wherever Iyer went, his continued recitation of Ulladu Narpadu made the air around him vibrant with the holy presence of Sri Bhagavan, compelling an inner response from all.